news from...
Start your day off on the right foot with great local programming on Sunrise from the Center on WRCE.
Jennifer Holland joins us on WRCO's morning show. She is an author and has a new book out as well. We're going to talk about life-changing lessons in canine intelligence. Good morning, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for having me on today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. So tell us a little bit about yourself, if you would.
Yeah, sure. So I'm an animal lover from way, way back, and also a lover of writing. And I was able to kind of bring those two things together in my career, and spent a long time writing for National Geographic magazine. I have a series of books called Unlikely Friendships that were a lot of fun to work on and people really loved. And the new book is Dog Smart, and I'm really excited about this book. I think it's got a lot of really interesting science, but also it's very accessible and I think a fun read, and I'm hoping people really love it.
So it's kind of a different process for you if you're writing for a magazine as opposed to writing a full-length book, I'm sure, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, very much so. The magazine, you know, you have obviously a more limited time frame and a lot less space to yammer on about the things that you want to say. So in the book, 300 pages later, I still had lots of things I would have loved to have added, and spent 3 years working on the book. So it's really pulled together a lot of good stuff.
I presume you love all animals, but dogs, are they your favorite?
They are up there. I hate to pick a favorite, but certainly right now with all the research and reporting I did on them and time spent with all kinds of working dogs and just the miraculous things really that they're capable of doing, I do have a special place in my heart for them right now, for sure.
So Dog Smart, can you tell us a little bit about the book?
Yeah. So the idea of the book is to consider what it means to be intelligent for a dog. So, you know, we tend to think of intelligence as in a dog as, you know, the dog that responds to our commands the most easily or that learns tricks. And that is certainly an indication of intelligence. There's no question. But there's so much about dogs that is intelligent in their own world, in their own right. And so I really thought about things like olfactory intelligence. You know, let's think about their senses and how they work and how they allow them to think and make decisions and thrive. Broadly, adaptive intelligence, the fact that dogs live everywhere that we live, that they have adapted to our niche and are, you know, became this very, very special animal to us. And in a way, you know, sort of took advantage of mm-hmm. of us in a sense, and really filled a very special role in our lives. And they're emotionally intelligent. Their communication system is quite robust and intelligent. And so I really dove into a lot of different aspects of intelligence and met with working dogs and their owners and trainers and learned a lot about how they learn, how they're trained, and what they're capable of in a broad way.
Did that include military animals?
It did, yes. I did get to spend some time at Lackland Air Force Base and see the dogs in training and even spent time also with police dogs, including getting to experience what it's like to be the bad guy on the other side of a bite dog, you know, a dog that's trained to take somebody down who's breaking the law and running. So I like to throw myself into things as much as I can. And so that was really an amazing experience.
That is an amazing thing because dogs, canine units, are real effective, and certainly they've made their way out to our area, even here in rural Wisconsin, and a very effective tool for law enforcement, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that's so amazing about them is that they're able to flip that switch and know when they're on duty and when, you know, a bite is appropriate. And then they go home to their families and they're absolutely the sweetest, most loving dogs. There's, you know, never a concern that the dog is going to get confused and, you know, bite someone in the family. They absolutely are able to be these two different animals.
So all dogs have some intelligence. If a dog does not learn tricks, is that because I'm a poor owner and can't teach him?
That is what they say. They say there's no dumb dogs. There's just bad trainers, bad owners. You know, I think every dog has their skill set, and some are certainly more committed to learning tasks. And you know, for example, border collies, you know, everyone thinks of them as being super intelligent, and they are. They can learn many, many words for things. They're so committed. You know, they want to work, and they want to do things right, and they want to please us. And there are some breeds and some dogs that just are a little less interested in that, but that doesn't mean that they don't have amazing skills in other areas if given the opportunity.
What about comfort animals?
Yeah, you know, they're really special. I include them in the kind of emotional intelligence section of the book, and really thinking about some dogs really just do have an amazing ability to read us and to kind of know what to do, you know, and comfort dogs, you know, they do get training to do the things that they do to comfort people. But there's also something innate there that I think anyone who's worked with them will tell you, that they just have a certain sense of, you know, when, what somebody's emotions are and how to respond to them. And that's why they're so effective in so many situations, whether visiting people in a hospital or working with kids who are, you know, stuck in the court system and are going through something very stressful, to, you know, emergency situations where, you know, there's been a disaster and people just need comfort to get through it. So they're really, I think, particularly special.
Can you let us in on any stories that you perhaps experienced firsthand while you were researching the book, Jennifer?
Yeah, you know, one thing that I did that was really, really neat was to spend time with at the Seeing Eye in New Jersey, which is one of the premier training centers for seeing eye dogs, for guide dogs for the blind. And I, again, got to watch dogs being trained and see them at different levels of training. And I also got to actually hold a harness and be led by a dog with my eyes closed in New York City on a very busy street. And I knew it would be kind of a neat thing. I thought, oh, this will be fun. This would be kind of a cool experience. But I was just amazed at how fast the dog moved, at how confident the dog was, and how easily we maneuvered down the street. You know, I didn't bump into anything. There was no tripping. You know, I didn't bang into pedestrians. It was, you know, clearly the dog knew exactly what to do and how to do it, and was very aware of, you know, things that might get in my way that wouldn't necessarily get in the dog's way. You know, they have to think in terms of what's going to affect you, their person. And so that was kind of a neat thing to observe and to be a part of.
I would guess you had some apprehensions, some fear at first in that situation, didn't you?
A little bit. You know, it's hard to give up your main sense. And certainly we use our eyes as humans, or, you know, most of us use our eyes as our primary way of experiencing the world. And so to hand that off and to put your faith in this animal is a little bit difficult. But once you do, you realize, you know, again, just how amazing they are at knowing what to do.
How many books have you written, Jennifer?
This is the fifth book. The first four were all part of the Unlikely Friendships series. There was Unlikely Friendships, Unlikely Loves, Unlikely Heroes, and then a book that was the dog's edition of Unlikely Friendships, just kind of pulling together the dog stories. And so this is the first book that's kind of a more, you know, it's a little more heavy duty. It's got a lot of content, a lot of science, a lot of stories. It's really a mix of all the things that I love. And I'm just really excited about it being out there.
Man's best friend, that's been the case for going back probably to the caveman era, hasn't it?
Absolutely. Thousands of years they've been filling that role.
Isn't that amazing? Anything else you wanted to add about dogs or your experience when you're putting the book together, Jennifer?
I think just, you know, another aspect of the book is sort of suggesting ways that we can be better owners and appreciate dogs for their dogness, so to speak, and different things that we can do as their owners to let them be, you know, as dog-like as possible, letting them sniff, letting them roll, you know, letting them kind of do the things that they naturally want to do, because so much of their life is consumed by doing things for us and living under our rules. And so as much as possible, I sort of feel like they're going to live their best life if we can appreciate what is it like to be a dog and let them sort of have a little bit of that back.
So give them a little bit of dog moments, and they're not necessarily going to revert back to not being trained and things like that.
Exactly, exactly. And they might actually be trained better because they're going to be happier, healthier dogs if they're, you know, not so constrained all the time.
Can you see yourself writing another book about dogs?
You know, I'm not sure. I may move on to another animal since I love so many of them, but there is a lot to say about dogs, and I really, you know, the working dogs I met from all different, you know, aspects of our lives were remarkable, and you could write a book on any one of those. So it could happen.
So do you have plans for the next book yet or not?
Still thinking about it. Yeah, just you know, sort of glowing basking in the glow of having finished this one after 3 years. But I'm sure I will keep writing, and animals are always my favorite subject.
I know you've done a lot of writing based on natural history and whatnot. Have you ever had a visit to Wisconsin before?
Oh, yes. I actually went to UW-Madison.
Ah, well, then you have. I did not realize that.
In Wisconsin. Yeah, I love Wisconsin. Great place. I was there not long ago visiting Madison and some friends. So I'm a fan, definitely a fan.
Sure.
Go Badgers.
Right, exactly. What part of the state has been your favorite in your travels then?
But, you know, I think I have a special love for Madison, I have to say. But, you know, it is really a beautiful state. I think it's underappreciated for its natural beauty. And it's just always a pleasure to go back.
I think sometimes when we live around here, we kind of take things for granted. You know, when you drive by it every day.
For sure, for sure. But I don't know if I can handle that cold anymore. I used to not mind it so much, but not so much anymore.
Yeah, it could be a strong winter. You never know. That's right. For sure. How can people get a hold of your works, Jennifer, if they'd like to do so?
Yeah, so Dog Smart is, you know, should be available on all the online retailers. Hopefully the bookstores, the regular bookstores also carry it, and you can always ask them to order it. And then I have a website, jenniferhollandwriter.com. You can link from there. And I'm also on Instagram now, Dog Smart Book Author is my handle, and I would love for people to follow. I'm kind of new to Instagram, so check it out, and please follow me for more great pictures and stories.
I'm thinking after we read Dog Smart, we're going to have more of an appreciation for our dog, aren't we?
I think so. And a lot of people have told me that. People who have read it said that it changed, you know, even just in small ways, it changed some things about how they respond to their dog. You know, people said, when I walk my dog, I'm more patient than I used to be. I give them time to sniff around and to really experience things as they naturally would. And that's very rewarding for me to hear.
Well, the holidays are coming up. I think it would make a great gift for a dog lover, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. I agree. Please. Send copies to everyone you know who loves dogs.
Oh, man. Well, nice to speak with you over the phone here today, Jennifer, and good luck to you in the future.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. That's Jennifer Holland joining us. Dog Smart, life-changing lessons in canine intelligence. We're pleased to talk about it on today's morning show. Michelle Ryan, an administrator with the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, is our guest today as we talk about some things that are hot topics in November. Good morning, Michelle. How are you?
I am doing great. How are you doing?
Ah, real well. Real well. We're getting set for, some things in the final couple months of the year. Something that always comes up, cryptocurrency. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, well, we want to talk about cryptocurrency right now because the FBI Internet Crime Complaint Center, or IC3, recently published a report on cryptocurrency fraud complaints filed in 2023, and the information is just staggering. Nationwide losses were 45% greater in 2023 than in 2022, and cryptocurrency used by scammers is just, it's on the rise, and the estimated losses associated with cryptocurrency is more than $5.6 billion and accounts for almost half of all financial losses reported to the IC3 in 2023. And there were more than 69,000 complaints involving cryptocurrency. Over 70% of the financial losses involving crypto specifically involved investment scams, which we talk about quite a bit. And about 10% of losses involved call center frauds, which include those common imposter schemes that we also talk about. You know, to bring this home a little bit, out of all 50 states, Wisconsin was the 25th most cryptocurrency fraud reports, with over $35 million in losses reported. So really want people to pay attention when crypto comes up in a conversation with someone they don't know.
Is it typical, like if you already have cryptocurrency, that you're going to get targeted, or is it for new people that are looking into it?
No, you don't have to. It is typically usually for those that don't already have cryptocurrency. Cryptocurrency is the latest in a group of payment methods that happen to be useful for scammers. You know, we've talked about cash, wire transfer, prepaid gift cards. Well, now cryptocurrency is the red flag. Not those who are actively seeking crypto as an investment on their own without any initiator from an outside contact. They just say, hey, I'm interested, and do their research and do something. This is those scammers, those people who are reaching out to you out of the blue and through bizarre methods of contact, if you will, and offer this as opportunities.
So what can we do to guard ourselves?
Well, the first thing is to understand why crypto is so popular, and it's because it's not controlled by any central institution or authority. It appears to be anonymous. I mean, users do have accounts, but there's no easy way to find out who is behind a specific account. It's really difficult for law enforcement to track, and many consumers just don't fully understand how it works. So it gives the scammers that opportunity to take advantage. And we just want to be sure consumers should be aware that no legitimate business, government agency, or other institution will demand payment in cryptocurrency. And if that contact that you're dealing with refuses to accept other payment methods or only accepts those prepaid gift cards, cash, wiring money, that is a scam or some other form of fraud. And hang up, disconnect, back away. Just don't engage further so you can stay protected.
The headline is Pig Butchering Investment Scams. That caught my eye. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, this one has just a fun name, if you will. Pig butchering scams require a lot of time, patience, and dedication from scammers that many targets do not even consider the possibility that they're being scammed. It's referred to by the FBI as a confidence-enabled investment fraud. It's a type of investment scam, and it's called pig butchering because the scammers, quote, fatten up their victims by gradually convincing them to contribute more and more to their fraudulent investment or scheme, and then they come in for that slaughter, if you will, by conning us out of our money. And, you know, again, the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, in 2023 had investment schemes as accounting for just 4% of all fraud, but accounted for over 30% of the total losses, and that average loss of $7,000 compared to other fraud losses of just $599 on average. So again, this is on the rise. People may start to hear this term used more often because it's a different variation of an investment scheme, and it's a longer term one.
So they try to befriend you or convince them to trust them and things like that?
Yeah, what it looks like is a scammer takes this personal approach and they pretend to be a new friend or a romantic interest. Others might act as a financial or investment coach and advise their targets on where and how to maximize their investment returns. But these pig butchers, scammers, if you will, also try to maximize their own returns by stringing the individual along for as long as possible. This scammer can show them fake profits, encourage them to invest more, and even allow them to withdraw small amounts early in the scam to continue building that trust. And then even if the target catches onto the scheme and tries to fully withdraw their investment, the scammer often attempts one last fraud by charging a fake withdrawal fee or taxes. So this one just, it takes months to unfold. The scammer rarely meets with the individuals in real life. And if this investment opportunity is presented to you by someone you've never met in person, be extremely cautious. because by estimates, more than 1 in 10 Americans who've used a dating app since 2018 have been targeted by pig butchering. But remember, it doesn't just come through the dating app. It could be these fake financial or investment coaches as well.
The term love bombing comes into play a little bit, doesn't it?
That's right. This is one of the red flags. Love bombing, or showing excessive affection on a dating site or app, especially followed by any type of investment or cryptocurrency pitch. Again, often these are tied to cryptocurrency schemes. If you get a wrong number text and the messenger tries to establish a relationship with you, that's a red flag. If you're told to download a special new or independent crypto trading app, and any investment app or site offers minimal investment amounts with guaranteed high returns or provides small returns soon after your first investment to encourage you to continue to invest and invest more, those are all red flags. And, you know, if you or a friend or family member sees these things, please try and recognize them as red flags and shut it down.
What about military scammers?
Yeah, this is just sad. So no matter their exact scheme, scammers impersonate military service members to create this plausible deniability for themselves. And over the past few years, the new technologies like deepfakes, artificial intelligence or AI, and voice cloning have made it possible for online scammers to convincingly impersonate a real person or invent a totally fake identity for themselves. And many consumers know not to trust someone who refuses to meet in real life. But with the military, there are real circumstances that really do make it impossible to meet. So consumers in these circumstances where they could be connected to a military service member, be cautious to protect themselves that some scammer isn't coming in and impersonating that military individual.
What are some red flags in a case like that, Michelle?
Some of the red flags are some of the things that the scammer would say, both directly or indirectly. You know, they could say that they can't access their bank account right now, but that they need money, that they want to meet you in person, but there's a fee to request time off. Traveling back to the U.S. is expensive, and they ask you to help them buy a plane ticket, asking you to hold on to a package if they ship it to you. So they ask for your address. Saying that they owe money to a commanding officer, so can you help them with that? Lots of different reasons to get your personal information or to get you to make a payment to them would be a red flag. All of these are ways that they could acquire that. So know that real service members will not ask a civilian to sign military paperwork. There are no fees for a service member to take time off or retire, and no commanding officer will contact you to demand money or gift cards. You know, we know real soldiers' deployments can last 1 to 2 years, but a scammer will try and keep their scheme going as long as possible. So never send money to someone you've not met and cannot verify with certainty that they are real and a trustworthy person. We don't want these scammers to harm individual consumers, and we certainly don't want them to harm the reputation of our military service members.
You just wonder, how low can they go sometimes, don't you?
They're going to take every opportunity to follow those headlines or follow our current events or situations where they can manipulate someone. And so, yeah, pretty low in this case.
I know you've had a range of more of the extortion reports lately and attempts by scammers. What can you tell us about that, Michelle?
Yeah, here at DadCap, we've received an increased number of reports about extortion attempts sent by email and text message. The messages falsely claim that the senders obtain private and potentially damaging information, often video recordings of the consumer. And they often imply that they've been watching and recording the consumer's actions for a long time. And the scammer then threatens to send the data to the consumer's friends, family, and coworkers if they don't pay up. They often claim that the consumer has visited unsafe websites, which allowed the scammer to access their device, including webcams and cell phone cameras, and they may even send some accurate information to make this claim seem more believable, like a Google Maps photo of the consumer's home. So this can be incredibly alarming and convincing. And just realize they're just using basic data that's out on the internet in order to be able to do that pairing of the consumer they're targeting and the home. They don't actually have any other legitimate information about you.
What do you do if you are the subject of a target?
Well, first, ignore the message. Don't contact them back or open any links or attachments. Then never send money, whether in the form of the cryptocurrency gift cards or the direct wire transfer. Then change your passwords. And I say this because often the scammer references having a password in their extortion email. And if you reuse the password for multiple accounts, and create new and unique passwords for each of the accounts to prevent the scammer from accessing them, because that will bring you comfort and also keep them out of your information. And then report it. If you're targeted by any extortion or blackmail scheme, report it to DadCap. We're going to share the information with the FBI, the Internet Crime Complaint Center, that IC3, and the Federal Trade Commission, so that we're all working together on shutting these extortion attempts down.
We talked about it a bit last time, Michelle, but the open enrollment period is now going on for, I guess, a little bit over a month yet. And is there anything there in terms of trying to keep people out of a scam jam?
Yeah, unfortunately, Medicare open enrollment is a prime opportunity for scammers, that current events type situation. So seniors and caretakers should be cautious of scams and frauds during this time. Some of the common Medicare enrollment scams to be aware of is a phone call asking you for your Medicare number, credit card information, address, or other billing details so they can, quote, renew your coverage or send you a new Medicare card. If you get contacted by an alleged insurance agent or broker that offers you a too-good-to-be-true deal on supplemental insurance, a Medigap plan or Medicare Advantage private insurance plan, or door-to-door solicitors claiming to be Medicare staff or other federal employees offering exclusive savings or discount products. That's the type of scams we typically see during this open enrollment period that deal with Medicare.
When you look at some Medicare scams, can you give us some other examples?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, throughout the year, we're going to see all sorts of things. So those could be mixed in right now, too. And that's messages like emails or robocalls offering free medical services or supplies, new vaccine promotions stating you need to pay out of pocket, but Medicare can reimburse you. Maybe someone calling a telemarketer trying to sell you DNA tests they claim are covered by Medicare, or you've overpaid for your benefits and are owed a refund. All you have to do is provide your Medicare information and you'll receive your money back right away. Those are some additional scams that happen, you know, outside of the open enrollment period. So always be on the lookout for them and never give that personal information to anyone who contacts you out of the blue, even if the request seems to come from Medicare. They don't have staff standing by to just call people or go door to door, and they don't sell in that way. Medicare will return a phone call that you make to them, but otherwise you need to initiate that contact. And you can always check things out at Medicare.gov or call them at 1-800-MEDICARE. That's 1-800-633-4227.
Likewise, with Social Security, they don't have a staff that they used to have, you know, and probably not going to call you unless you solicited the call first, right?
No, absolutely not. And the IRS and, you know, the government agencies aren't there out there just randomly calling consumers. They'll return calls in response to a situation, but then you aren't.